I'm really having fun with this commitment. I want to thank you for asking me to come up here and coming out and listening. We've spent about 6 weeks on the first four chapters. We spent about five of those weeks on step one. Again, just to recap step one. Step one is difficult for us to fully internalize. It says in the step book, who among us wishes to admit complete defeat? It says in the step book, instincts balk at investigation. We don't want to be hopeless. We don't want to be powerless. We want there to be another option besides spiritual living. You know, we want to figure this thing out and somehow beat it. And that's just the way almost every alcoholic personality is. So there's a ton of material in the beginning of this book that paints a very, very dark picture for us. It describes the alcoholic, and then it says that we suffer from an obsession of the mind. And how that presents is it presents in us drinking. We pick up a drink, and we almost always do it from a place of sobriety. You know, I never took the first drink drunk. So what that means is it means if we're admitting to powerlessness, we're admitting that we can't protect ourselves from the next drink. We don't have that power. It's almost not up to us. It's up to the booze. And the second part of step one is that once we start drinking, we lose control over the amount we take. We may plan on only having two beers at the bar, but we close the place. And once we start drinking, we create an actual physical craving for more alcohol. It's mental and physical, and it's very, very hard to stop. It's very, very... I mean, how many times have you had like three drinks and said, "Man, that's enough. I don't think I'll have any more." Now, I used to drink with people that would do that, and it would be like, enough isn't even something that computes to me. You know, you've had enough? Are you crazy? How do you have enough? How do you do that? I know more, you know, and I know not done yet, and I know all those. I don't know I've had enough. Because of that craving, I usually drink until I pass out. And, you know, I have to drink until unconsciousness stops me from continuing. And if that's not bad enough, you know, that I've got a mind that's going to bring me back to drink no matter what, and a body that's going to ensure I poison myself drinking, if that's not bad enough, there's a dash, and then it says that our lives have become unmanageable. And then you start to look into the material in this book to see what that unmanageability looks like. What is that unmanageability? How does it manifest in our lives? And it manifests emotionally, mentally, spiritually. It manifests in defective relationships with other people, in self-pity, in remorse, in guilt, and self-centered fear, and just being totally uncomfortable with ourselves and totally uncomfortable with our environment. Wherever we are, that's not where we want to be. And there's just massive amounts of emotional unmanageability. We're not in control of our emotional natures. We suffer from self-pity. We suffer from depression. We have huge amounts of anxiety. We have an utter lack of dealage most of the time. You know, I'm sorry, I can't make it. I'm going to stay home. You know, I don't feel like, you know, I don't really feel like doing that right now. You know. You know when you can start to tell somebody's recovering from alcoholism? They'll actually tell you what they're going to do and then do what they tell you they're going to do. You know, then you know they're on the path to recovery. Because how many broken promises, how many times did we tell people, you know, we were going to show up and we just couldn't. We were drunk or we were hungover or we just were so shattered we didn't want to deal. That's the first step. Then... okay, that paints a really bad picture. But we then move into the second step. And the second step basically states that there is a power that we can access. We can actually gain access to a power greater than ourselves, which will solve our problems, relieve us of our burden of self, and relieve us of our symptoms of alcoholism. So this power, you know, who among us wishes to, you know, give ourselves over this power on like day two in AA? You know, it's not great news to look up on the wall and see, you know, the power that's going to help us is going to be God. You know, that's not what most of us want to hear when we're brand new in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're figuring that's not going to work. You know, I've got real problems is what we're saying. You know what I mean? But the only thing aggressive enough to be able to go after alcoholism is a spiritual awakening, is a spiritual conversion experience. That's really your only hope if you've gone down the scale far enough. If you're what this book describes as a hopeless alcoholic, it's a spiritual awakening or it's death or insanity. That's what they're offering you here. Now, we're moving into chapter 5. I figured it out one time, at around 6,000 meetings I've been to, about 6,000 AA meetings, you know, over the course of my AA history. And practically at every meeting you hear this read, how it works. Well, when something is read that many times, at least for me, it can become redundant. It can become that thing that they read that, you know, identifies the group as an AA group, and, you know, would they please hurry up and get it done so we can get to the meeting? And, you know, who's going to read how it works? I'll read how it works. And, you know, you get somebody to go up there and read how it works. And somebody will read how it works, and then somebody will raise their hand in the same discussion meeting where how it works was read and go and say something like, well, I don't know how it works. It just works. You know? Have you listened to anything? You know what I mean? You don't know how it works. They just read how it works. How it works is how it works. You know? There was an article, because I work in the media, I got to pay attention to some of these things. And there was an article on Alcoholics Anonymous that made Wired magazine. And, you know, it was sent out all over the place. Everybody's probably read it. And in that article it says, you know, we still don't know why AA works. Well, speak for yourself, okay? I know why AA works. Because these spiritual exercises lead to a spiritual awakening. That's why AA works, you know? There's been such a deterioration in certain areas. You know, you thank your lucky stars that AA is so good in North Carolina. I'm all over the place in AA groups, and I got to tell you that there are areas that have so deteriorated that they would be unrecognizable as AA meetings to our co-founders if they came back to life and went to one of these meetings. They would be unrecognizable. It's almost like an anger management, a group therapy session in some of these groups. There was a movie that was done, and again, I've got to pay attention to all this stuff. There was a movie done, and Richard Lewis was involved in this. He's one of those sober actors out in Hollywood, doesn't mind breaking his anonymity as far as, you know, being sober. But he did a film called Drunks. And the whole film revolves around AA meetings, okay? I mean, the whole film is people interacting in these AA meetings. And it is the absolute worst stuff I've ever seen in my life. I would last 2.5 seconds in one of these groups. You know, everyone is massively, insanely untreated alcoholism. You know, they're just crazed. And like everybody in the group is like that. This is what is portrayed as Alcoholics Anonymous in the movies, in the media. You know, if you watch Rescue Me, Dennis Leary's always going into the AA groups and talking to everybody into going out drinking, you know. Like it's just, it's unbelievable what some people think Alcoholics Anonymous is like or should be. How does it work? This is how it works. I'm going to read this. This is how it works. And, you know, I would really like our public relations people in Alcoholics Anonymous to remember this, because they're doing a horrible job when all you see coming out of Hollywood is the absolute worst kind of AA meetings that there are. Being portrayed as AA, because there's people watching those TV sets going, you know, I might have to do something about my drinking problem someday, but I ain't going to that, you know. And you know, we need to be just a little bit more responsible. How does it work? How does it work? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Okay, what's the path? Because I'm interested in you know, not failing. I want to be one of those people who actually succeed. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. So it says it right there. If you don't completely give yourself to this simple program of 12 steps, you can be in that statistic of people who fail. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. What they mean by that is, remember, this comes after some material in the book. Being honest with yourself is admitting you're a real alcoholic or not. If you can be honest with yourself with the material that they put in this book, whether or not you're a real alcoholic, if you're going to be honest with yourself, then you're going to realize you don't have any other way out. There ain't no door number three. It's a spiritual awakening, or it's death or insanity. So that's what they're talking about with being honest with it. They're not talking about, you know, did you give the right change back at the cash register? They're talking about something much more fundamentally important. They're talking about, are you being honest with yourself about your alcoholism? There are such unfortunates, they're not at fault. I love the way Bill Wilson basically says this. He says it a number of times in this book. They either cannot or will not. He doesn't say they're losers. You know, one of the first things they told me when I came in up in North Jersey was kids, stick with the winners. Yeah. Well, if you think about that, you know, stick with the winners, that means there's got to be losers. Who are the losers? And why should I stick with the winners? This book is telling me to stick with the losers, is what this book is telling me to do. This book is telling me to work with the people who are desperate and who need help. It doesn't tell me to go hang with the saved. It tells me to try to help save the people who need to be saved. You know, so stick with the winners. Only a loser would stick with the winners. Anyway, I don't know if that made any sense. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. What's going on today a lot of times is they're called comorbidities or co-occurring disorders. Like if you go to a treatment center and, you know, or you go to get assessed, clinically assessed for what's going on with you. This happens to a lot of us when we show up at hospitals or treatment centers. They'll try to assess what's going on with you, and more the diagnoses are coming in with comorbidities or co-occurring disorders. A lot of us are being put on medication right out of the gate because of how we're showing up while we're being assessed or clinically analyzed. Now, what this book is basically saying is if you can be honest with yourself about your alcoholism, and that would mean accepting step two and accepting step three and moving forward with the program of recovery, you too can recover, even if you have grave emotional difficulties. So that's really, really good news. And I have seen that time and time again. I've seen that time and time again. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. I like to use that as an instruction in how to tell my story. If I'm asked to get behind a podium and tell my story, I'm supposed to tell you what it used to be like, you know, maybe 30% drinking career. What happened, talk about what was going on and what happened that led me to make a decision to get involved in a recovery process, and then what I'm like now. You know, what that recovery process has done for me. This is experience, strength, and hope. So often people get behind a microphone and a podium and talk about what it was like, what it was like, what it was like, what it was like. We want them to get sober more than their family members do. You know what I mean? You know, please, let's move on and talk, how did you get sober? How did you recover? I want to hear that too. I don't want to hear about how you ran yourself over with your car while you were driving it, you know, five or six times. If you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. This is something that I ask people that I'm working with. I'll go through and I'll make sure they're clear on the first two steps, and then I'll ask them, are you willing to go to any length? You hear it a lot of times, are you willing to do anything in AA? And people will ask you that before you know what any length looks like. Has that ever happened to you? Kid, are you willing to go to any length? And you're thinking, what does this guy want me to do, you know? If I say yes, what am I locking myself into? Well, what I like to do is when I'm about to ask somebody this, I like to make sure that I've shown them what any lengths looks like. Any lengths is going to be to do what's required in this book for a spiritual awakening. That's what any lengths is. Any lengths isn't a lot of the crazy stuff they have you do in AA today. You know, there's a form of AA that believes very, very strongly in sponsorship authority and home group loyalty. And those are the two most important things to those groups. And this book goes contrary to both of those. All right? Our loyalty must be to God, okay? And the authority must come from God. And we can be loyal to AA, that's fine, but what this book points us in a different direction. So if we're willing to go to any length to get it, then we're ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. Let's think about what's an easier, softer way. How about don't drink and go to meetings? That's an easier, softer way, okay? That's not going to work for a real alcoholic. How about, you know, two or three meetings a week and, you know, do a step a year? Okay, that's not going to work for a real alcoholic. They're going to be drunk as a goat in 5 minutes. You know, how about, well, you know, I'm going to go to two meetings a week, then I'm going to do therapy, then I'm going to do Primal Scream, I'm going to take some yoga, you know, and, that's not gonna work if you're a real alcoholic. What you're going to need to do if you're a real alcoholic is meeting consistency, absolutely. Consistency. Not like five meetings this week, no meetings next week, two meetings the week after, 17 meetings because you got to do a jackpot, you know, and then no meetings for a month. That kind of stuff will get you drunk too. But consistent meetings and working the steps with a sponsor or a spiritual advisor. You know, being accountable to participation in your own spiritual condition by going through these steps when it's time to do so. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. This book rarely begs us to do anything. But it's telling us that when we start to go through these steps, step 3 through 12, they're begging us to be fearless and thorough. That's a lot, you know. We shouldn't be called Alcoholics Anonymous. We should be called Half Measures Anonymous, you know, because so many of us really, the first resentment I had was when somebody said, "Have you gone through the work yet?" I'm like, "The work? Work? I didn't come here for work. If I knew there was work here, you know, I never would have come to AA. Well, kid, you're assuming we care whether or not you're here, you know? Oh. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. It does not say some of us have tried to hold on to our bad old ideas. It says our old ideas. We need to be willing to let go of all of our ideas. Our ideas are really what got us where we are. I used to hate it when my sponsor said, "How's that working for you?" You know? Not very well, thank you, you know. Well, how's it working for you? How's your life look? How's everything going? You know, is everything roses? Or are you mad at half the world? Or do you have a laundry list of bad breaks and misunderstandings that have come your way in the last month or two? You know, how's it working for you? Sometimes we need to let go of our old ideas. I had really bad ideas. But even my good ideas weren't that great, you know? We need a clean slate sometimes for God to be able to rebuild us. You know, sometimes we have to help with erasing the crap that's already on there. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. They're telling us what the answer is. The answer is a significant relationship with the power greater than ourselves, with God. Rightly relating ourselves to God. Clearing away as much of the wreckage that blocks us off from the sunlight of the Spirit as we can. We need to participate in this. There's a place in the book, the 12 and 12, where it says, God will not render us white as snow without our cooperation. And what I take that to mean is God is not going to heal us without our cooperation. How then shall we cooperate would be the question we would need to ask. And how we answer that is this. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection with care and complete abandon. So moving through the steps, what are we supposed to do? There's a prayer directive here. We ask for God's protection and care. Now have a care for us. Protect me as I start to do these steps. Especially in step 4 where I'm listing every single bad thing I've ever done, every problem with somebody I've ever had, every time I've ever been angry or hurt somebody. I'm listing it all. You know, protect me during that because that's not a great, that can be very overwhelming to put all that down on paper. Protect me when I start to go out and make direct amends to people because that, I'm scared of that. I have a lot of fear behind that. I don't want to call up, you know, Harry, you know, hook hand Harry, and you know, and tell him that you know I'm going to pay him back that loan that I ran out of town on 10 years ago with the 50% VIC every week. You know, I don't want to do that. Well, you know, God is going to need to keep me safe and protected while I'm doing that. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Okay. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, that's very, very clear. We tried to carry this message to alcoholics. What message? The message of what the steps have done for us. Our experience going through the steps. That's what we're supposed to carry to other people. Now, you know, to simply encourage somebody to stay sober is good. That's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. But remember, the good is sometimes the enemy of the best. The best thing we can do is offer them a path, a kit of tools, to allow them to become free. What would you rather do? What would you rather do? Have somebody encourage you to just stay sober a day at a time or offer you a recovery process that will allow you to be free? You know, that's the type of message that we need to carry, a message with depth and weight, like the doctor's opinion says. You know, so often in the earlier groups that I went to, you know, they were very encouraging. Oh, Chris, it was great to see you. You know, please come back. You know, here's my phone number. I'll see you Tuesday night. Just keep coming. Just keep coming. You know, if somebody shared something stupid, somebody would yell, just keep coming. You know, just keep coming. Well, encouraging me to keep coming is good. Offering me a plan of action that will lead to my recovery is best. So that's what we need to try to do. We tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. It's a good thing that we're not graded on perfection in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're graded on effort and willingness. We stay sober on effort and willingness. I sponsored this guy. He came out of the inner cities of Newark and Elizabeth. And I sponsored this guy. And this guy was murderous, okay? The first time he was brought out to a diner after a meeting, somebody started to tell him about how much trouble he's in with the first step. And he took a fork and he jammed it into the guy's forehead. And the fork was going like this. He didn't like to hear bad news, okay? You know? And, I mean, I've literally seen this guy pick people up by the neck in AA meetings and take them outside and lump them up proper. You know what I mean? Now everybody's going, this guy's going to get drunk. This guy's going to get drunk. Chris, your guy's out of control. Well, they didn't realize he was trying as hard as he could. He's got 18 years now sober, okay? He was trying as hard as he could. He came from way, way behind where most of these people came from. And he was doing the best he could. And if you look at his progress, you know, he beat up about 7 people the first year, about 4 people the next year, about 3 people the year after that. He was getting better, you know what I mean? And he hasn't beaten anybody up in about 7 years now. And, you know, hasn't dragged anybody out of an AA meeting in a long time. So we're graded, or you know, we, our pass-fail grade is basically how much willingness and how much effort we put into this stuff. So, you know, there's two things your four-step is never going to be. One of them is finished, and the other is perfect. We have to just do the we have to be fearless and thorough, and we have to do the best we can. But there's always room for improvement. There's always the next time, or there's always the action we can take now, you know, that's going to keep us safe and protected. Many have exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We all fall short in word, thought, and deed every single day. We do. And, you know, that's part of being human. It's about having a willingness to move forward and try a little bit harder the next time. That's the attitude that we need to have. We're not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And knowing Bill Wilson, you know, it's a good thing that he wasn't claiming spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, that's the chapter more about alcoholism, and there is a solution. The chapter to the agnostic, we did that last week. And our personal adventures before and after, that's the stories in the back, our personal adventures before, when we were drinking, prior to a spiritual awakening, and after, when we've recovered after having a spiritual awakening, make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. All right. That's a summation of the first 2 steps. We're alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. And probably no human power could have relieved us of our alcoholism. What are some human powers? Let's look at this. Is a sponsor a human power? Absolutely. Is a home group a human power? I think God is in the home group, but it's filled. It's filled with human beings. Is a therapist or a psychiatrist a human power? Absolutely. We have to understand that we need to access the Spirit. We need to access the power to be able to get out of this. You know, God could and would if He were sought. Being convinced of these three ideas, we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? You know, how many times in early AA was I told, kid, just turn it over? You know, if you ask them, if they keep saying that to you, ask them, how do you turn it over? More than likely, they're not going to be able to tell you. Kid, you just got to let go. Well, how do you let go? You just got to hang on. You know? One day at a time, easy does it. Do some upside down thinking. You know? How do you turn it over? You turn it over by taking the spiritual exercises of steps 4 through 12. That's how you turn your will and your life over to the care of God. In AA, if you've not done that, then you haven't turned your will and your life over, and you're still hanging on. The first requirement for step 3 is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. How's that working for you? You know, how's it working for you, your life on self-will? So many times we're desperately unhappy. We're desperately lonely. We have emotional... Our emotions are tortured when we get in here. And we can be making a ton of money. We can have a great family. We can have a lot of stuff going on in our lives and still be completely tortured. I was watching this thing on Eric Clapton this morning. And Eric Clapton, at his height, 1971, 72, I mean, this guy had the women, he had the money, you know, everybody on the planet wanted to be him, and he was suicidal, you know. It's because he suffered from alcoholism and drug addiction. He was suicidal. I'll bet you any man, you know, between 15 and 30 would have traded places with him, you know, in a heartbeat. And he was suicidal. We're almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Here's another thing. We spend our whole lives expecting the world to judge us on our intentions. Okay, my intentions are good. Yeah, but you just ran over Grandma. You know, we don't care about your intentions. We don't care that you were coming over here to visit. You ran Grandma over. You shouldn't be driving. You know, we're judged on our actions, not our intentions. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. He's forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. If you all would just do what I think you should do, not only will I be happy, but you'll all be happy too. Chris, you're living at home with your mother. You're 32. You know, why in the world would I be remotely interested in doing what you think I should be doing? You know what I mean? In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. I'll try to move you around the chessboard. I'll try flowers. I'll try handguns. You know, whatever it takes to move you around the stage. You know, because you need to be moving around the stage. Because this is not pleasing me right now, the way this is going. You know, this is This is alcoholism. This is how alcoholism presents. It presents in this crazy, self-centered, self-obsessed worldview where we think we're the center of the universe. And everybody else is asteroids orbiting, you know, planet Chris. You know what I mean? And every once in a while, you know, you'll come in for a landing, and as long as, you know, it's something good for me, you know, you're welcome here, you know? It's just absolutely insane. That's the way we are. What happens? The show doesn't come off very well. Chris begins to think that life doesn't treat him right. You know? Oh, man, life didn't treat me right. You have no idea. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, you know, okay, I'll admit, you know, I showed up, and maybe I shouldn't have been there. You know, what we'll admit to like 5%. He's sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Absolutely. Defective relationships are almost always the cause of our immediate woes, including our alcoholism. That's a line from the 12 and 12. The first thing we need to do is start to look at how we're treating other people. And we don't see how sick we are. We are so sick, we don't think we're sick. And as we start to get better, we're so sick that we think that these other people are sicker than us. You know, we need to start to get perspective. And the genius of the fourth step really is that if you do the fourth step the way this book asks you to do it, you are going to see 100% that your problems are of your own making. Your problems are not coming at you, they're coming from you. And this is a quantum shift in perspective. Okay, when you see this after you write enough inventory, you go, holy shit, I caused this whole thing, my whole life. And it's a quantum shift. And that's when healing can really start. Because if we think it's you, it's not me, it's you, then you have to get better for me to heal. And we all know that ain't going to happen. You know what I mean? People aren't going to change just because Chris wants them to. My whole problem is people aren't doing what I want them to. So this is big. This is what we need to start to look at. We need to start to look at our relationships. Playing God. Is it possible that playing God is bossing your family around? You know, bringing up every bit of minutia about the house and how the house system should work, and you didn't put the can on the garbage right, and you know, you know, your sock is in the hallway. I mean, can playing God be trying to direct all the other players? Is it possible? One of the greatest things I think I ever heard in an AA talk was from Chuck Chamberlain out in California. He was like this beloved AA guy, you know, who his funeral was twice the size of Bill Wilson's. I mean he was beloved out there. He's telling his story and he's basically saying it's time to go make amends to his family. And how he made his amends was this. He went up to them and he said, "Look, you know, I'm wrong about this, 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 and this. And I need to let you know, I will never, ever, ever ask you to do anything ever again except for one thing. And that is, if there's anything I can ever do to help you, will you please ask me?" And then he followed that. Okay? He never, ever asked anybody in his family ever to do anything ever again. Now, that's a little bit too close to perfection for me, okay? You know what I'm saying? But it's a beautiful example of understanding what this stuff is about. We are bossy, controlling, codependent, you know, insanely sensitive morons. You know, and the family puts up with us because we're so defective, we're lovable. You know what I mean?
Let's see.
Our actor. Now, we're the actor, okay? Our actor. We are self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. We're like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in winter, complaining about how awful everything is. You know, he gives a bunch of examples here. And then he nails us, okay? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. It does not say drinking a quart of vodka every day, that is the root of our troubles. It doesn't say that. It says selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of our troubles. It's what feeds the whole defective system. Selfishness and self-centeredness. Now, we're so selfish and so self-centered, we think we're generous. You know what I mean? We have to start writing inventory to see just how defective we are. I thought I was the sweetest guy in the world because I would lend you bail money to get you out of jail or something. Like the friends that I had left that didn't have any names. They were like Bear Man and Weezer, you know. And this one guy, Rat, you know, he spelled it with two T's, you know, R-A-T-T. And I'd have to bail these guys out every once in a while. And then they'd disappear because they didn't want to give me my $400, and I'd have to go search them out and beat them up and steal their guitars or something. I mean, it was just insane. It was insane. But I thought, you know, here I am, you know, being a nice guy.
For me.
Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Let's look at the word driven, okay? Because I don't want anybody in here having the guilt and the remorse that you didn't do a better job. How can you be responsible for doing a better job when you were asleep? The spiritual awakening will waken you up. You probably did the best you could under the circumstances being spiritually asleep and asleep to this stuff. Driven. This one time I was drinking with this guy, Bob Rademacher. He's dead now. Most of my old drinking buddies are. But we were coming back from the shore, the New Jersey shore, and he was in a Toyota Celica. And he was so drunk, he was like this close to passing out. And I was strapped in, and I was along for the ride. And he put it in fourth gear, and he put his foot down on the gas pedal, and we were going flat out. As fast as this car would go, we were going up the turnpike. When we came to toll booths, we would just go through the toll booth at 115 miles an hour. No! Right. Now, I am being driven, okay, by this guy. I'm going, hey, you think we should pull over? Hey, how about if I drive? Hey, let's stop at the next rest area. Hey, you know, and no, it just, finally he spun out on a corner and you know, we ended up in a ditch. Thank God, you know, nobody was hurt and because he had passed out. I was being driven by a maniac, okay? Now, think about that when I read this sentence again. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. If we're being driven by something, are we fully responsible? You know, I don't think so. I think we were doing about the best we could, but we need to do better. Because, you know, we're not ignorant of this stuff anymore. Now we need to take responsibility and we need to start working a program and we need to start moving forward. Sometimes other people hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some time in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. At best, we co-create the problems in our life. At worst, we cause them. But only extremely rare circumstances are we not to blame at all.
So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. Why do you think we ask you to do service commitments? Why do we think we ask you to do certain things? We're asking you to do unselfish acts because we know you're dying of selfishness. Selfishness is going to kill you. So you get these sponsors that ask you to do good things. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. So if you think, oh, okay, I've just figured it out. Chris just told me what the problem is. I'm selfish. All right, I'm not going to be selfish anymore. Starting right now, I'm not going to be selfish anymore. You know, come back next week and tell us how that worked for you. You know, I make it about 5 minutes before I'm like, give me that. That's mine. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. The steps really do reduce our selfishness. They get us in touch with the power that can heal. That's really what they're designed to do. This is the how and the why of it. Now, everybody in here is probably familiar with the third step prayer, okay? The third step prayer is not taking the third step. The third step prayer is an affirmation prayer. You're affirming a decision that you've already made. Okay? So what I want to do is I want to make very, very clear the decision that we need to make prior to doing that affirmation prayer. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. So number one, we have to quit playing God. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. Okay, then we need to figure out how we can get direction from God. If he's going to be the director, I need to fire myself as director. Jeez, I've been letting an idiot run my life. He's the principal, and we are his agents. Okay, what does that mean? If you're a life insurance agent, that means that you've been empowered to run around and sell policies. And if it's done right, if you're following the rules of the home office, if someone gets in an accident or dies or whatever, they can collect on that insurance. You're a trusted agent. The same thing is with our relationship with God. We're agents of God's ever-expanding universe. We are. We're agents of God. That's what this book promises us. But we have to live by the rules so that we can get the backing of the home office. God's the principal. We're going to be his agents. He is the father and we are his children. Everybody in here understands what it is to be a parent. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Remember, Alcoholics Anonymous and the step process is about freedom. It's not about bondage. It's about freedom. Many people today are trapped in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're trapped in a meeting-based sobriety. God forbid they miss three or four meetings. And, you know, they'll come back, oh, I missed three or four meetings. You know, I'm doubling up. I have a basket case. That's not what this is about. This is about offering us freedom. And then we don't come to the meetings to get. We come to the meetings to give. And that's a whole other shift in perception that shows that you're in recovery. You know, you have a recovered spirit because you're there to help. It's not like you need to fill up like AA is a spiritual gas station. You know, that foolishness never works. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Remember, each action step in here has promises. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. So God will provide what we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. That's a promise. Established on such footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. These are serious promises. You know, a lot of meetings read the 12 promises. And they're really, what they are is the ninth step promises. And there are some good promises. But how about this? How about we begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter? This is saying we're not going to fear death. You know, that's one hell of a promise. It says that we're going to face life successfully. You know, not maybe monetarily, maybe in relationships, maybe as a family member, maybe as a community member. We're going to face life successfully. These are serious promises. We are now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood Him, if you understand what I said and you'd like to join me in this affirmation prayer, I think most of us know it. Let's go ahead and say it together. Anybody that would care to join me? God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Thank you for that. And it says, we thought well before taking this step. They tell you afterward. making sure we were ready. But, you know, you need to be ready. You need to understand everything up to this point. You need to understand everything from page 1 to page 62 to be able to take this prayer. We could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. We found it very desirable to take the spiritual step with an understanding person, such as a wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. But it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. Okay, it says, next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. I don't know about anybody else, but when I was sitting around drinking, I never decided to put a list together of all the people that, you know, I owed amends to, and, you know, all the things I was afraid of, and, you know, all my sexual misconduct. Yeah, I'm gonna list that where I can be found. Many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. All right, let's pretend for a moment this sentence actually means what it says. Though our decision, which is basically, you know, what we came up with in the affirmation prayer, was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourself which have been blocking us. So what do you need to do at once after doing the third step prayer? You need to start on the fourth step. It's a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Blocking us off from God. Blocking us off from our fellow man. Blocking us off from ourselves. Blocking us off from a really high quality of life. Okay, therefore we started upon a personal inventory, and this was step four. I'm going to stop here for tonight. We've basically covered step three. Next week, I am going to be up in New Jersey attending to some business, and my buddy Ronnie is going to take this commitment for the week and do a topic, story, whatever he decides to do. But anyway, thank you all for staying and listening. Thank you.